Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and thank you for joining me on this edition of our English feature program. I'm Philippa Hitchin. Coming up in just a few moments, on the second anniversary of Pope John Paul II's death, church leaders mark the closing of the first phase of his journey towards beatification and sainthood. On Palm Sunday, Pope Benedict celebrates Mass with special greetings for young people, marking the annual World Youth Day. And more than a quarter of a century after his assassination, another candidate for beatification, Archbishop Oscar Romero of San Salvador, continues to inspire all those working for justice and reconciliation throughout the world. Welcome to the programme. This Monday evening, April the 2nd, marks exactly 2 years since the death of Pope John Paul II in his Vatican apartment, an event followed by hundreds of thousands of people here in Rome and by millions more watching on their television screens in countries across the globe. To commemorate his predecessor's life and death, Pope Benedict presided at a Mass in St. Peter's Basilica on Monday afternoon, while earlier in the day the Basilica of St. John Lateran was the setting for a solemn celebration marking the closing of the first stage of the late Pope's journey towards beatification and sainthood. My colleague Susie Hodges has been following the story.
Rome's Vicar General Cardinal Camillo Ruini and scores of other senior church officials attended the special ceremony held at the Basilica of St. John Lateran to mark the closing of the diocesan investigation into the life, virtues and reputation for holiness of the late Pope. Tens of thousands of pages of documentation and transcripts that were collected during this preliminary stage were formally handed over to the Vatican after being sealed in special boxes. The beatification process will now be taken up by the Congregation for the Causes of Saints. The documentation about miracles attributed to the late Pope includes the case of Marie-Simon-Pierre, a 46-year-old French sister who said she was inexplicably cured of Parkinson's disease after praying to him. Parkinson's was the same illness suffered by Pope John Paul, and the sister's sudden cure came on June 2, 2005, exactly 2 months after his death. In an interview, Sister Marie told us how on the afternoon of that day she was asked by her superior to write the name of John Paul, and she did so, but because of her illness and the trembling it caused, what she wrote was practically illegible.
En rentrant dans ma chambre, j'ai comme eu l'impression d'entendre une voix qui me disait « Prends ton stylo et écris ».
Sister Marie then explained how when she went up to her room to go to bed that night, she felt the sudden urge to pick up a pen. She wrote a couple of pages, and to her astonishment, her handwriting was completely legible. She woke up around 4 a.m. the next morning and found she had no more pain. She was able to jump out of bed and said she felt completely changed with a profound sense of interior peace.
Ce que je peux vous dire, c'est que j'étais malade et que je suis persuadée que je suis guérie.
Sister Marie said her neurologist and other doctors who later examined her were at a complete loss for a medical explanation. The beatification cause is concentrating mainly on the case of Sister Marie, but the Diocese of Rome received details of many other apparent miracles attributed to Pope John Paul's intercession. The postulator who has been handling the beatification cause for Pope John Paul is Monsignor Slavomir Oda. He told me that he had received thousands of emails and letters from every continent, most of them from people saying they've been helped after praying for the intercession of the late Holy Father.
I can say that it is not the unique investigation going on. It was one of the first cases arrived into my office. And I think that it is one of the most particular and most representative for this case, because it regards the disease of the Pope, Parkinson's disease, and the sister. She works in the pro-life field. So I think that it is one of the fields in which the Pope was most interested in.
Were there some things that surprised you during this beatification course, some things perhaps that you didn't know about the Pope and have come to light now?
Well, one thing that was very particular, that many persons that wrote to my office named the Holy Father not by his sanctity, the Holy Father, but they used a very familiar names like Carol, our father, and so on. So it means that the Pope has entered in our life, in the life of our family, and he is concerned as a member of our particular family.
Were many of this documentation from Poland?
Yes, I have received many documents from Poland, but practically from all the world. Here in Europe, for all the European states, but also from the United States, from the North America and South America, Asia and so on. So practically in this process, I have received the signs of interest and support for this process from all the world.
Are you more convinced than you were before that Pope John Paul will soon be a blessed and then afterwards a saint?
Well, I'm convinced that he is sent, and what we are doing corresponds to the practice of the Church, and we should observe this practice. But it is my personal conviction that he is sent. It is a great joy for me to have this particular approach to his person. How the process will continue, I don't know. We'll do everything observing the rules of the canon law.
Now, this process, of course, it's not only for the people who believe that Pope John Paul is a saint, but there's also people who, if they feel there's an objection to raise. Have you had many objections?
No, I have received some objections, of course, well, a few letters. And a very interesting thing that all of them concerned not the person of the Holy Father, but they were contesting the particular aspect of the theology of his magisterium.
So they weren't, as you say, against his person, they didn't doubt his virtue, his holiness?
No, not at all.
Okay, at this point then, is your work finished?
Well, no. The Cardinal Vicar, he has given me the mandate to continue this work, so I have finished only the first part of my work.
Do you think at this point there's a chance that Pope John Paul will become a blessed in as short a time as, say, Mother Teresa of Calcutta did?
Well, I don't know, because, you know, all the canonic process has its unknown aspects, so it is impossible now to say how long it will be.
So to sum up, for you, what are your emotions after the end of this period?
Well, I'm very happy because it is finished, but I'm also convinced that all these 2 years that I worked with this process was for me a great gift of the Lord.
And my thanks to Susie Hodges for that report. Susie was speaking there with Monsignor Slawomir Oder, postulator for the cause of beatification of Pope John Paul II. Earlier on Monday, a Mass was celebrated in the Vatican by Cardinal Stanislaw Dziwisz of Krakow at the late Pope's tomb in the crypt of St. Peter's Basilica. And the final event of the Day of Commemorations marking the anniversary of the late Pope's death was a Mass presided over by Pope Benedict in St. Peter's Basilica. On Sunday, meanwhile, Pope Benedict presided at Palm Sunday Mass with special greetings for all the young people gathered to mark the annual World Youth Day. The celebration began with a solemn procession through a sunny St. Peter's Square as the tens of thousands of faithful in attendance waved palm and olive branches, recalling Jesus' entry into Jerusalem on the first Palm Sunday. Here's Chris Altieri with all the details.
Deacons, priests, and bishops in solemn procession went before the Holy Father, who blessed the palms and olives of the people, saying, "We are as Jerusalem's citizens of old, who greet their Lord and King.
Ci associamo alla folla dei discepoli che in gioia festosa accompagnano il Signore nel suo ingresso in Gerusalemme.
The Pope called the procession an expression of joy because we can know Christ, because he allows us to be his friends and gives us the key to life.
Anche noi abbiamo visto e vediamo tuttora i prodigi di Cristo.
The Pope added, yes, we have seen and still see the wonders of Christ, how he leads men and women to give up the comfort of their own lives and put themselves completely at the service of those who are suffering, how he gives men and women the courage to oppose violence and lies and make room in the world for truth, how he in secret leads men and women to do good for others, to seek reconciliation where there was hate, to make peace where there was conflict.
A suscitare la riconciliazione dove c'era l'odio.
Pope Benedict continued the tradition started by John Paul II and dedicated Palm Sunday to the young who were out in force in the square. The Pope urged young people to live pure, innocent lives.
Mani innocenti sono mani che non vengono usate.
The Holy Father said, to be in the presence of God, we need innocent hands and pure hearts. Pope Benedict said, innocent hands are hands that are not used for acts of violence. They are hands that are not sullied by corruption and bribes. Pope Benedict said, our hearts are pure when they are not stained by lies and hypocrisy. A heart is pure when it is estranged from the intoxication of pleasure, a heart for whom love is true and not just the passion of a moment. The Holy Father said, with the cross, Christ burst open the door to God, the door between God and humanity.
Ora essa è aperta.
Now the door is open. But also from the other side, our Lord is knocking with his cross. He is knocking on the world's door, on the door to our hearts, which all too often remain too closed to God. In an appeal to all those who in the world are indifferent to God, Pope Benedict said, Christ has this to say.
Guarda a me.
If the proof that God gives you of his existence in creation fails to open you to him, if God's word and the church's message leave you indifferent, then look at me, at the God who made himself flesh to suffer for you, with you. See that I suffer for your love and open yourself to me and God the Father.
È questo l'appello.
After communion and before giving the final blessing, the Pope greeted pilgrims in many languages, including English.
When we acclaim Jesus, model of humility, our Messiah and King, in a special way I greet all the young people gathered in Rome and around the world to celebrate World Youth Day. May the great events of Holy Week, in which we see love unfolding in its most radical form, inspire you to be courageous witness of charity for your friends, your communities, and our world. Upon each of you present and your families, I know God's blessings of peace and wisdom.
And my thanks to Chris Altieri for that report. Speaking before the recitation of the Angelus on Sunday last week, the Feast of the Annunciation, Pope Benedict XVI noted this celebration coincided with the annual Day of Remembrance for those missionaries who have been martyred for their faith.
24 marzo, anniversario dell'assassinio di Monsignor Oscar Romero, arcivescovo di San Salvador, si è celebrata la giornata di preghiera e digiuno per i missionari martiri.
The Pope noted that March 24th is the exact anniversary of the assassination of the former Archbishop of San Salvador, Oscar Romero, who was shot through the heart while celebrating Mass in the simple chapel of the hospital where he lived. Just the day before his death, he had delivered an impassioned homily calling for an end to repression by the country's powerful military engaged in a civil war against leftist guerrillas. Appointed Archbishop of war-torn San Salvador in 1977, Romero was widely seen as a timid and conservative leader who was unlikely to cause any trouble to the military government. But as he travelled around the country, seeing firsthand the injustice and repression being carried out by death squads, his indignation and his condemnation grew. In just a few years, he became known all over the world for his uncompromising message of peace, justice, and reconciliation. On March 24th, 1980, he was gunned down by a hired assassin. Yet more than a quarter of a century after his death, his message is more influential than ever before.
I think he's the patron in waiting for the justice and peace movement. He really was the paradigm example of an ordinary priest trained in a traditional way who did quite extraordinary things in absolute commitment to the challenging social teaching of the Church.
Julian Filikowski is chairman of the UK-based Archbishop Romero Trust, which was set up earlier this year under the patronage of Cardinal Cormac Murphy O'Connor of Westminster.
The Trust was actually founded in 2005, but we collected together our trustees and our patrons and some initial funds, and we had a public launch in January with Cardinal Cormac Murphy O'Connor and with Archbishop John Sentamu, the Anglican Archbishop of York. And we've set up alongside it an association of Friends of Romero, which allows all kinds of people concerned about Archbishop Romero or involved in justice and peace to link themselves to the work of the Trust.
So tell us, what would you say is really the main aims of this trust?
Well, we've been set up to promote knowledge about the life and the work and the death, I suppose, of Archbishop Romero, to celebrate the anniversaries of his martyrdom, his birth, appropriately and liturgically, to foster private devotion to him in accordance with the guidelines that are in operation when a beatification process is going on. And we are trying to raise money to finance small projects in his memory that continue his work for social development, human rights, and support to the poorest communities in Central America. We've already funded the refurbishment of the little house where Archbishop Romero lived in the grounds of the Divine Providence Cancer Hospital, and that we put in air conditioning and blinds and new cabinets for the relics, which unfortunately after 25 years were beginning to decay a little. And with the Carmelite sisters there, we had a little project which has hopefully made that much more secure for the future, because that house is it's a holy place, a place of pilgrimage for thousands and thousands of people every year.
As you say, it's more than a quarter of a century since his murder, and yet he's still very much revered, isn't he, by the Catholic community there in El Salvador, but also throughout Latin America.
He's revered in El Salvador. Monsignor is as they say, is alive in the Salvadoran people. He's revered throughout Latin America, but he's revered worldwide. And this last weekend, the 27th anniversary, there were masses, liturgies and celebrations to mark that event all over the world. In England alone, I know of services in Liverpool, Shrewsbury, Westminster, and a major mass in Scotland celebrated by Cardinal Keith O'Brien along with the Apostolic Nuncio. He's remembered people doing confirmation classes. His life is brought to them as a great contemporary example of a Gaudium et Spes bishop. The diaconate programs use details of his work because he was very much a diaconal bishop, a man of service. And he's a great inspiration.
You yourself met him, didn't you? Tell us a little bit about that, the work you were able to do with him.
Well, I knew him. I met him on several occasions, and I was so privileged. It's the greatest privilege of my life to have enjoyed his friendship. I worked with him when the church was being persecuted and human rights were being massively violated. I was finding support for him from the church in Europe and publicizing some of the most grotesque abominations that were going on. I took a parliamentary delegation to get into the prisons and the National Guard headquarters where torture took place. And that was in support of Archbishop Romero. I helped make the links with Cardinal, the late Cardinal Hume and Cardinal Sunens of Brussels and Cardinal Marty of Paris, who again gave him great support when, unfortunately, some of his fellow bishops in El Salvador were hostile to the pastoral approach he took. But he was a very simple man, and a man with a very deep spirituality, but yet self-effacing and simple, and yet an enormously great speaker and orator and preacher. And his preaching and teaching was really what inspired and enthused his people.
His preaching, his teaching were also what caused the regime in the end to order his assassination. You're calling for his beatification, and yet there are still those who see him as a victim of the political situation rather than a martyr who died for his faith, aren't there?
Well, the cause was set in motion in 1990 on the 10th anniversary of his assassination. It went through the process in the diocese, and Monsignor is now on the first rung of the ladder. He is servant of God, Romero. The cause was brought to Rome not by people with a political motive, but actually by the current Archbishop of San Salvador, Monsignor Sanslacaye, who is a member of the Opus Dei family. And it has been brought there, it has been examined in Rome, but it's currently outside the canonization track because there's been a review of his teaching to ascertain and to check out that it was fully orthodox. And I understand that process is complete, and we're waiting for the cause to go forward. For him to be recognized as a martyr and hopefully beatified and eventually canonized as an icon of holiness, as a great example for the church in Latin America and worldwide of a bishop who lived the magisterium. He was a martyr to the magisterium and who made that option for the poor, which can be such a glib phrase. He made it a reality. He lived it in his daily life, in his ministry. And he gave his life for the poor.
San Salvador, El Salvador, of course, still suffers huge problems of poverty today. Do you think that Archbishop Romero would be perhaps somewhat saddened if he came back today to see, in some ways, how little things have progressed since his assassination?
Well, a lot of things have progressed that he would, I think he will be pleased with, and the war has ended and that right-left violence has ended. The violence today is of a different nature and order after the Civil War. There's been a lot of change in the countryside. The economy is very different. And I think, like everything, he would look back and some things sad at the changes and others he would celebrate them. And we spend a lot of time saying, what would Monsignor say today? He wrote to President Carter to try to block the military aid to El Salvador, which was being used against the campesinos, the peasants in the countryside. I wonder what he would write to President Bush today. The way he lived, the commitment he had to human rights, his weekly denunciations were like an ongoing truth commission. And since his death, the methodology he used of isolating the facts, who was responsible, where it happened, of offering support to the victims and seeking that there should be no impunity, has actually been the process that the world has taken on. So I think there are many things he would look back on. And I think that the church in Latin America today, the people of the church in Latin America today, just would love to see him recognized formally as a holy person, eventually as a saint of the church.
You've also been involved in the launch of a book of his reflections, his meditations, haven't you?
Yes, there was through the year with Oscar Romero is a collection of extracts from his homilies and writings, which was originally published in San Salvador many years ago. But there's been such a great interest in him all over the world, people looking for not only the biographies, of which there are two or three around, but his words, that this was translated into English and was launched in Britain in January of this year. And many bishops have bought copies for their clergy. And I understand that the Anglican Archbishop of York is going to distribute it to all his clergy for their Holy Week reading. The words he has are a kind of evangelical wisdom, which is quite timeless, and people find it enormously helpful today.
You see him very much as a kind of patron saint of the justice and peace movement, don't you? Are you optimistic that he will, in fact, be beatified in perhaps the near future?
Well, I think he's the patron in waiting for the justice and peace movement. He really was the paradigm example of an ordinary priest trained in a traditional way who did quite extraordinary things in absolute commitment to the challenging social teaching of the church. And he lived it and gave his life for it. And I think that the justice and peace movement, which strives and struggles with terrible challenges without easy answers, which was exactly as Romero would, he would be one of a future patron. But I am confident that one day in the not-too-distant future, he will be beatified. This year would be his 90th birthday. If this process cannot really get a boost this year, I hope it will be very soon afterwards, and certainly in time for the 30th anniversary of his martyrdom in 2010.
And my thanks there to Julian Filikowski, chairman of the Archbishop Romero Trust. And that's all from me, Philippa Hitchin, and from all of us here at the English programme for today. We'll be back on the air at this same time tomorrow, so be sure to join us then if you can. In the meantime, don't forget you can always find all our news and feature programmes on the internet. Look us up at www.vaticanradio.org/English. For now, stay tuned to Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.